Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the You Need Us, We Regulate You show. And Rick, I'll tell you why. Some time ago, I was at a very bad conference. This is a bad conference. There were actually other conferences breaking out in the lobby and the hallway because it was so bad.
It was spontaneously combusting?
It was. I mean, the keynote speaker asked if anybody else had some slides they wanted to show, and it was just...
And knowing you, you did. You have them, you keep them in your wallet.
So a government official, who will not be named because this would cause all kinds of trouble, as a part of that person's lecture, came up with this quote. I wrote it down. You need us because we regulate you.
And they weren't talking about a laxative.
No. I started thinking about the need for regulation. I think, you know, the people cry out to be regulated, as we
I
know
do.
That.
Have you heard me crying out to be regulated?
Food, shelter, obviously sex is a basic need, and regulation.
Did you remember I'm a Republican?
Oh, and there's a thing, by the way. I was just thinking of it on the way in. So we got Rand Paul, who could be running for president. We've got Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, but Tony, you could be running for president.
Sure, that's true. But we to have
are you, by the way?
two very powerful political figures. I'm not feeling that power in the state of Kentucky. I'm feeling the regulation. I am not feeling the political power, because the problem with Republicans and Tea Parties is they can't send any money home. If you're Democratic, you can send the money to the constituents. The Republicans and Tea Party people, they campaign on reducing government spending. So we in Kentucky are not looking like the state with two of the more powerful figures in Washington right now.
I don't know what to tell you about that. I mean, you know, hey, there was a time where we used to have a pretty powerful Republican stronghold up there, but the whole landscape of politics has just, the perceptions have changed even in the last 5 or 10 years. And while I don't think this is true across the board, nor do I, I'm not necessarily trying to pin this on any of our Kentucky delegation, but politics has just got such a dirty, dirty sentiment. People just, I don't think people completely trust what goes on all the time anymore. And, you know, right or wrong, it's the perception.
Right. And in tough times like these, you have to stick to your principles, like no taxation without regulation, those kind of bedrock principles that our country was founded on.
That's a Democratic principle, isn't it?
I don't know. Rick Phillips, UK service owner for Telephony, I really ought to introduce you and then ask you, would you please tell them about our regulated web presence?
Well, we have all, I got to quit saying the word all because that's just not true anymore. We have the audio of the shows at WMKY.org or ORG, if you haven't ever went to an organization site before. There you will find Health Matters. It's in the menu structure for the local shows. Once you get on the page, you'll see the most recent shows. There's 4 or 5, maybe 6 of them listed there. You can listen to the show. It's got a real nice embedded little player. Tony actually listened to a show with it the other day, just so people understand, we do actually go to the website. And I listened to a show, and I really enjoyed the little player. I could skip right past the part where you were talking and then jump just right straight to where I was talking. It was perfect. So you can go there. You can listen. You can go to iTunes. You can do a search for the podcast. You can have Health Matters delivered right straight to your MP3-enabled device automatically. It usually comes out about 3 or 4 days after the live broadcast, so you just have to be patient. We don't say it's going to be there by 8 a.m. Eastern time. We say it's just going to be there when it gets there. So, again, if you want the audio of the shows, WMKY.org. If you want to visit us on Facebook, that's where we've been posting most of the written information for Health Matters. Go to Facebook.com, either put in /HM Radio Show on the URL, or you can do a search for Health Matters Radio Show. Either way, you'll find us.
Our sponsor, back after a long absence, the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, gastroesophageal reflux disease. We call it GERD. And remember our motto, it's hard to be placid with a chest full of acid. Gastroesophageal reflux disease occurs when stomach acid flows backwards into the esophagus and back into your chest. And that backwash of acid irritates the esophagus and causes the classic signs and symptoms. Classic signs and symptoms, acid reflux, acid taste in the mouth, and a symptom called heartburn. If these occur at least twice a week and they interfere with your daily life, that is GERD. Now, you might ask, Rick, why do we get GERD? What causes GERD?
Lots of stomach acid.
Yeah, lots of stomach acid, but as long as it stays in the stomach, we're perfectly fine. The stomach is equipped to handle that acid. The esophagus, the swallowing tube, is not. There is a muscle, a sphincter, and as an eighth grade level humor person, when I say sphincter, I get the giggles. But this is a sphincter. a band of muscle, a ring of muscle around the lower part of the esophagus. It opens to allow the food to go through, and then it is supposed to close.
To keep everything in.
Yeah, to keep the acid in the food down low, and the problem is that sphincter is not closing properly. It allows the acid to reflux backwards. What is a risk factor for gastroesophageal reflux disease? If you are obese, you have extra pressure pushing back on the sphincter. If you're pregnant, same thing. Asthma, don't know why, but 75% of asthma patients experience GERD, according to the Cleveland Clinic. Diabetes does that, dry mouth, smoking does it. A hiatal hernia actually alters the anatomy so that it's harder for the muscle to close off. And if food stays in your stomach for a long time, and this happens especially after a high-fat meal, that can lead to acid reflux. Symptoms, burning sensation in the chest called heartburn, sour taste in the mouth, that's the acid reflux, chest pains, and we have to be very careful, Rick. I can tell you people have had heart attacks that have presented with identical symptoms to acid reflux. We do not feel comfortable if a person has severe symptoms, gets sweaty, nauseated, throws up, and experiences pain in the chest. We do not say that that automatically is GERD. As a matter of fact, we really worry about a person's heart. If you're not sure, you need to get to the emergency room. Sometimes there can be difficulty in swallowing. The food can actually lodge because that muscle doesn't work well and stay in the esophagus. Cough, hoarseness, and a sensation of lump in the throat. You need to see a doctor if you have chest pain, we mentioned. Also, if you have severe or frequent symptoms, if you're taking medicines for heartburn more than twice a week, probably time to get a doctor to take a look at you. That is our sponsor. More about that in our second fractional portion, gastroesophageal reflux disease, known as acid reflux or GERD. It's hard to be placid with a chest full of acid.
I like that.
Thank you. Good motto for that disease. Now, on to the first article of the day. Rick, we were talking about this before the show.
Barely.
Yeah, but the question is, if I ask you right now to the no clock,
yes,
no,
I'm hungry.
Nothing around, yes. If I ask you to wait 30 seconds and do something, how would you figure out when 30 seconds has passed? You've not got a watch, you've not got a cell phone or a clock.
Do I have a Health Matters billboard?
No.
Oh, well, I'm in a lot of trouble. I usually count 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000. Yep, that's been long enough. Let's do it.
Yeah. So, you know, you do that. Does counting Mississippi?
No.
I don't count Mississippi.
No, because actually some of us take longer to say Mississippi, and it's longer than a second, so it's bad.
And it's also, it's hard to say. I just go with 1,000.
Well, it's great up to 9. You start getting into that double digits, 23 Mississippi. That's like 6 seconds for me.
Yeah, that's a problem. I will tell you, when I'm working out, a lot of times I will close my eyes and I'll count and see if I can keep up with the clock. That's what
you
I
work
like
out?
To see. Not as much as I used to, but yeah, when I do, I'll see if I can keep time, because it's nice to have time pass without you actually having to watch the clock. One of my majors in college was physics, and as a physics major...
You majored in physics?
Yes. We all loved Richard Feynman. Feynman was one of the greatest physicists of all times, and I've read all of the books about Feynman. And one of the things that really stuck with me is that he tried to figure out how he could keep time mentally. And he found that while he was reading, while he was walking and doing things, he could keep mental track of time, and he was fairly accurate. However, if anybody talked to him and he had to speak, he would lose his internal clock.
Nice.
Yeah. And he had a friend that actually could talk, and he realized that there are several ways that you set your internal clock. Now, the reason that I remembered Feynman's problems with talking in a clock was because on August 23rd, I read an article published by the University of Limerick in England. I guess it's in England.
Is that where Limerick's came from?
It's in Ireland. Yep. Yes, it is. 46 students at the university participated in this study as a course requirement. First of all, they took the students and they gave them the Beck Depression Inventory. It's a series of questions that figure out if you're depressed or not. And they were students.
Right. And so they weren't depressed.
They weren't entirely depressed, but they were minor depression. We sometimes call that dysphoria. You know how students, they...
Before a test, during school.
Yeah, and they're all weepy and all that sort of stuff.
They don't look that way at night.
Yeah, well, I mean, at certain times, but this was during class, so they were probably all depressed then. And then they asked them to listen to 5 tones of varying lengths. When the tone finishes, they wanted them to estimate how long the tone played. And these tones played from 2 to 65 seconds.
Nice.
Meanwhile, they had them remember a number so that they couldn't count by thousands. So they actually had to just listen and estimate how much time had passed. They divided them up into a low depression score group and a higher depression score group. It turned out the students with the higher depression scores were better at judging the time than those with low depression.
Now, who would have ever thought to try to test against that? How do those two correlate?
Well, when you think about people being depressed, it alters their perception of reality. In some cases, it changes so that they feel that the hopelessness. You feel like, well, I have no talent, I have no skills, I'm a worthless
human. Don't talk about me like that.
Yeah, I understand. But it also, though, sometimes it makes people more realistic.
Okay.
I mean, truthfully, I have no friends. I am not a good
What am I, chopped liver?
well, you're my friend, but we're not that close.
Right.
Yeah. So at any rate,
and we're going to get farther away.
Actually, more in touch with reality when you're depressed, and it's particularly about these times. And again, time flies when you're having fun, right? So,
going awful slow right now.
Thanks for that. So this is the concept of depressive realism. It may be that depressed people have a better appreciation of time than people who are not depressed.
So you're saying if I lose track of time, I'm going to be happier.
Well, I think I will say, and this is a problem I have, is I will estimate how much time I've got left before something, before a meeting or before I have to leave or something like that. And I always, always, always overestimate how much time I've got.
Really?
I am invariably late. I think, well, I can get that done. I can finish that. And I never can finish those things. And I'm always late for stuff because I tried to do too much before the thing started.
Yeah, that's a whole different problem.
Yeah, but I'm saying this. I'm bad at estimating time. I don't know how I do when somebody played a tone, but I certainly am bad at estimating the amount of time
I
have.
But, I mean, that's good news. That means you're probably not depressed.
Well, and you know yourself. I always overestimate how much time I've got to talk.
No, you overestimate how much material you need to bring.
Yeah, that's true. So keep that in mind. Now, let me get this in. I got 2 minutes left.
I'm not going to let you. I'm going to keep talking about that. I'm going to make you depressed.
This was a 67-year-old guy reported in New Scientist, the July issue, and this got me thinking. He's 67-year-old. He had a problem after surgery. He found that when he was listening to TV, he heard the sound before he saw the picture. So he figured his TV was messed up. But then he realized he was hearing his own voice before he felt his jaw move. They did a brain scan. He had a couple of lesions, they said. I'm not sure if he had a small stroke or whatever, but these lesions were in areas that may play a role in hearing and timing. So he would hear things before he would see them. I guess the brain would process the hearing before seeing. So he was shown clips of people talking and asked whether the voice came first or the lip movements came first. They had to play the voice 200 milliseconds later. He was hearing things 200 milliseconds before he actually saw it.
Wow. Now, is that not an anomaly or what?
It's a really strange thing. It appears that every sensation has its own processing time. And for most of us, when our brains work well, they are very close together, and we just learn to kind of filter out the differences in processing time. He had some type of a sudden stroke or a sudden event where the processing times got off, and it happened so suddenly he could not filter it. Now, they said, well, they're going to work on trying to fix it, but I don't see how you can fix that. It looks to me like he's just hosed.
Well, I mean, there's got to be some system they can bypass somewhere and jump the circuit.
Right. The main thing to do, I think, is close your eyes, listen to the radio, and then you don't have to filter out those video signals that are really off sync, right?
Yeah, do that now.
Yeah, because we're on time. As a matter of fact, it's time for a break. Why not take a break, resynchronize your audio and video, and come back and hear our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm one well-rested Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver.
I took a nap while we were gone, Tony. It was wonderful.
Let's set the scene here.
We're recording this like 3 days later. It's great. I feel
Rick
so good.
Has both kids now are out of house. He is the empty nester.
Yes. Except for the dog.
And we talk, work is going so bad right now, it's not even worth working at home.
No, it's very busy. I don't even try. I just go home. And
so he's actually sleeping, which is a very strange thing. I don't know how we're going to handle it here at Health Matters. Send your suggestions into our Facebook page.
There's a lot going on in telephony at UK. Actually, it's about to change again. I think it's going to take on a new facelift. And you might even hear the word messaging be used, or possibly unified communications. But there is a lot going on right now with communication systems.
Unified communications. Rick is the Yun-Kun expert.
Tony, we have unified communications, you and I.
Yun-Commune. Okay. This is the
You don't believe me, do you?
This is the You Need Us, We Regulate You show. My salute to a very bad conference and a unfortunate quote by a government official. And I thought, well, why not put it on the air because it made me mad. It's just that simple. Our sponsor.
You bully pulpit.
For this,
you're using your bully
right.
pulpit.
To bully is what I'm using it for. You're absolutely right. The sponsor of the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD. It's hard to be placid with a chest full of acid. What can you do if you are, in fact, an acid reflux victim? First of all, lifestyle changes. Maintain a healthy weight. Oh, my goodness. maintain a healthy weight.
Come on.
Why can't we
maintain a healthy weight? Isn't there a real cure?
Okay, well, here's the second thing. You'll like this. Avoid tight-fitting clothing. And one way...
Or see item one.
How do you avoid tight-fitting clothing? Well, if you maintain a healthy weight, you have a better shot at that.
My weight is healthy.
Avoid foods and drinks that trigger
heartburn.
Oh, you
mean good for my health.
Common triggers. That's absolutely right. Common triggers, fatty or fried foods. Everybody agrees with that. Tomato sauce. I don't know the tomato sauce. For some people, it triggers it. Alcohol, probably. Chocolate.
And, not dark chocolate, just regular milk
chocolate.
Well,
chocolate's debatable, but some people trigger with chocolate. Mint. Now, I had a young woman that had some pretty significant acid reflux, and she had a box of Altoids, those are really strong mints, on her desk, and she would go through a box a day. And so we stopped that. I think it helped her, but it didn't solve the problem. Garlic, onion, and they mentioned caffeine, although I have just read a report indicating that caffeine, at least in this study, did not seem to have any relationship to the level of acid reflux and heartburn. Next up, eat smaller meals. If you overstuff yourself, you put extra pressure on that sphincter, on that band of tissue that's supposed to seal off the stomach. The more pressure, the more problems you have. And the next one, elevate the head of your bed. No, we do not mean an extra pillow, because by the time you toss and turn at night, that doesn't count. Most people say place wood blocks or cement blocks or telephone books under the feet, under the legs of the head of the bed, so that the head of the bed is around 6 or 9 inches higher than the base. I have mentioned this. It's dirt cheap. It does use gravity to keep the acid down in the stomach at night. Most of my patients do not like sleeping on a slope. And lastly, don't smoke. Do not smoke. That's really bad for acid reflux. Some foods that may be a problem, again, French fries and onion rings. That's the classic. When you remember the commercial where the woman wants to get onion rings in the drive-thru, she's apparently going to sit in her car and eat onion rings, and she can't do it because her body's telling her don't do that. It gives her heartburn, but she can take a pill, and by golly, she can drive through the drive-thru and order onion rings. That is what American medicine is all about, doing bad things and taking pills so that it doesn't cause you as much symptoms.
Better living through chemistry? Is
absolutely.
That what you're saying?
Full-fat dairy products, whole milk, butter, regular cheese, sour cream, will increase your acid reflux. Fried or fatty cuts of beef, pork, or lamb. Again, the fats slow down the stomach emptying. It stays there longer, more acid, longer time for the muscle to weaken and fail on you. Bacon fat, ham fat, and lard. Oh, man, they're just all the good stuff. In fact, increases acid reflux. High-fat desserts, ice cream and potato chips, cream sauces, gravies, and creamy salad dressings. Now, on the opposite end of things, some items in some people worsen symptoms. Citrus fruits and some vegetables, oranges, grapefruit, lemons, limes especially, pineapple, tomatoes, tomato sauce, salsa, chili, and pizza. I don't know why pizza comes as a fruit and vegetable, but it did in this list.
Hawaiian pizza.
Harvard Medical School identified chocolate on its list. The Mayo Clinic identified garlic and onions on their list. Both include caffeine as well. And foods that may help, yogurt and probiotics, according to the Mayo Clinic. Peanut butter, according to some sources, although that's controversial, and fiber, also controversial, may be beneficial for your acid reflux. That is our sponsor, Gastroesophageal Reflux, reminding you it's hard to be placid with a chest full of acid. Please use your lifestyle modifications and try to limit your reliance on medications for your acid reflux. Next up, the Affordable Care Act. Rick, Obama.
It's not going to be so affordable after all, is it?
Well, there are a lot of issues with the Affordable Care Act, and I thought it was time to really to, for one thing, we're about to get into an accelerated phase of rollouts of different provisions of the Affordable Care Act, and I thought it was time that we just reminded our radio fans what is already in place and what is upcoming about the Affordable Care Act. First of all, signed into law March 23, 2010, and here's what has already changed. Number one, coverage for children with pre-existing conditions. That was one of the top targets, and they've done that. Number two, allowing children to remain on their parents' coverage up to age 26.
You know, I guess the parents, I'm trying to figure out if I like that or not.
Well, if you're paying the bills anyway, it's a lot easier adding them to your family plan than it is to buy insurance individually for them. Number three, end of lifetime limits on coverage. Actually, the insurance would shut off after a certain amount of payments. So if you had very expensive transplants and things like that, you would just run out of insurance. That no longer occurs. There's no end to lifetime limits. Should save some people from bankruptcy. Also, prescription drug discounts for seniors. That was a fairly easy one. Rick, you may remember we talked about Medicare Part D, which was passed during the Bush administration. They cut a lot of deals, and one of the deals was they cut with the pharmaceutical industry was we will not ask for discounts. We'll pay full price. Well, they went back and renegotiated that. Free preventive care for people with health insurance and seniors on Medicare. Now, be careful. If you have an existing policy, that doesn't necessarily apply. It applies to new policies, and you've got to make sure that your preventive care is actually in accordance with national guidelines, no matter what your physician says. You've got to take that extra step to make sure that you are following national guidelines, because that's what the insurance companies will use to decide about free preventive care. And then finally, insurance companies must use 80% of their premiums for health care. That's the 80-20 rule, and also they call it the stop-loss ratio. 80% of your insurance money needs to pay for your health care collectively. They cannot withhold large percentages and use them for bonuses and give them back to their shareholders. Now, there are a couple of other things, Rick, since I am boring you to tears.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not you. It's just this stupid... The last few years, it's all it's been in the news, you know, and now you're seeing news items where restaurants are going to have trouble with some of the coverage options for employees. And
yep.
Particularly, one Lexington restaurant kind of drew a line in the sand and says, I'm going to start cutting back on my staff and my hours because I can't afford to pay for their health care.
Right. Well, for that matter, UPS has dropped spouses of some of their employees, about 15,000, who had insurance available elsewhere. They've said, look, go elsewhere. We know you like our plan, but we're not going to offer you our plan. If you're non-union and if you have insurance available through your place of work, you can't get your spouse's UPS insurance anymore. They argue that the Affordable Care Act causes them to do that. I think in general right now, companies are kind of skittish about the whole thing, and they're trying to find ways to lower their burden, to lower their liability, their exposure as these things roll out, because it is very difficult to predict what's going to happen next.
Absolutely. And I do think that, you know, if you're as bad as it sounds, I mean, I think if you're a major corporation and you're looking to lower your costs and you're going to do this right now, I think, and this is why we're talking about this, is I think we as a society are still pretty, and I hate to use the word ignorant, but I think we still don't quite know what's going on with this whole thing. And so it would be very easy to blame it on this and us be able to believe it. I mean, it'd be a pretty easy thing to believe that this was adding so much cost to the underlying, you know, bottom line, that we were going to have to make some changes.
Yeah.
It gives you cover fire, so to speak, to make changes.
Yeah, we are, first of all, at Health Matters, we are no fan of the status quo. There were large numbers of people who simply didn't have access to health care. So we are not requesting that anybody go back. But likewise, what we're trying to do is to point out some of the advantages and the disadvantages of what we call Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Now, as I mentioned, things start to accelerate now. First of all, Medicaid expansion in some states, and Kentucky is one of those states, one of the few states in the Southeast, actually, that decided from the start to go with Medicaid expansion. Beginning January 1st, 2014, 22 states will expand, 18 will not, some others are still on the fence. Income eligibility in Kentucky will be raised to 138% of poverty. That is, if you are of income less than 138% of the federal poverty line, you are eligible for Kentucky Medicaid. Now, Medicaid originally started out to assist families with small children, and we are now expanding Medicaid in the state of Kentucky. And I've heard, Rick, I've heard wildly varying numbers, but a lot of people are saying around 300,000 potential.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, could have insurance coming out of these, either through Medicaid or out of these exchanges. Medicaid fee should increase to these equal the Medicare fee. This would be a great boost for primary care because Medicaid barely pays expenses for many physicians in the state of Kentucky. Also starting in 2014, the individual mandate in 2014, if you don't have insurance, you will be fined. And the fines start off in 2014, $95 for every adult that doesn't have insurance, $47.50 for a child, or $285 or 1% of income per family that doesn't have insurance. And by the way, those fines will rise rather rapidly. So you may think to yourself, well, I can pay $95, I'll just not get the insurance. It gets harder and harder. It's more than doubles in 2015, and it continues to rise to the point where it's going to really hurt if you don't get insurance. That's the individual mandate. You must have insurance. The federal government is committed to trying to help you get the insurance, but you must have it, and the fines start in 2014. You do get tax credits for purchasing insurance. Stay tuned on that. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. In 2014, actually starting October 1st, state's insurance exchanges, these marketplaces, and in Kentucky, it's called Kynect, K-Y-N-E-C-T. You can go visit their website if you want to. There's not much there right now, but come October 1st, they are supposed to have a variety of insurance products. So let's say you do not have insurance at work. Let's say you're not satisfied with your insurance and the cost of it. They will have insurance products, and you will be able to shop on the Kynect, the Kentucky marketplace, the insurance exchange, supposedly starting October 1st. They're supposed to have a bunch of people who are, they call them navigators or assisters. They're supposed to be people who are, I think they call them connectors here in Kentucky. Every state is supposed to have these experts that will help you determine what's the right policy for you. The training of those has been very difficult because the details are not out. Most states are behind on training, not certain whether they're going to be available in time or not.
Sounds like a pretty big task.
Yes. Yes, absolutely right. 16 states are going to run their own exchange. The federal government is going to run other exchanges. Also in 2014, the Sunshine Provision, that is, medical device manufacturers need to report payments to doctors and teaching hospitals. If I'm getting all kinds of money from some pacemaker company, which would be laughable, very bad use of their money, but right. If I am, I have to report it. The federal government reports it. You can go and see who's paying my bills so that if I recommend that you buy the robotic Model T2300, then you know that I'm getting paid a lot of money to make that recommendation.
Where does the phrase Sunshine Provision come from?
I think it shines a light on these backdoor, dark alley relationships.
You don't think it was Sunshine Medical that was, I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to sit here and put the two and two together. I'm thinking, where did they come up with that? I mean, because, yeah, I guess it does shed a little light on what goes on there. But, you know, they had got a lot of that under control with the pharmaceutical companies many years ago, actually.
So, Rick, you want the high-powered flashlight provision where you can just actually focus the beam on people doing dirty dealings in a back alley.
Yeah, I guess
forget
that's
about
what
sunshine.
I want.
Yeah,
no, I want right. The Q-beam, the big 1 million candle watt.
That's right, and we'll just flash that sucker, and we'll see the money changing hands.
No, we'll incinerate the money that's in the light.
Rick wants a laser. Other thing in 2014, Medicare quality performance targets. That is, if I have diabetics, they have to reach certain targets. If I have people with high blood pressure or high cholesterol, they have to reach certain targets. These begin, and Medicare will begin docking my pay if they don't hit targets. Now, docs are really worried.
As I said, of all the ones we've talked about, I suspect the medical community is probably very fearful of that one.
Well, most actually, in studies, the majority of healthcare providers do not like the Affordable Care Act. It puts too much risk. It puts too much money in play for people who, you know, you can show up every day, you can do your work, you're sober. Your patients may like you, but you may start losing money on this. So it really worries doctors, I'll tell you. Also, just of interest, a new clinical trial mandate on insurance companies. They have to pay for their clients if they decide to participate in a clinical research trial to try to improve the number of people that are involved in research in the United States.
So they're going to make sure that you get paid to be as part of a clinical trials.
Yeah, well, what it means is that if you decide to participate in a clinical trial, and let's say it goes bad, the insurance company is not going to say, well,
we're not paying for your health care.
We're not paying for your health care.
Gotcha.
That way we can do insurance with some backstop from the insurance companies. So those are the things that are going to happen, but Washington Post, August 25th, pointed out that states are really scrambling to meet this October 1st deadline for those insurance marketplaces, and I think Kentucky is no different than other states in that regard. It's going to be a big problem. I think the biggest problem that I see right now is that, again, Washington Post on August 24 mentioned the Affordable Care Act may lead to a proliferation of bare-bones insurance policies. That is, if I can sell you an insurance policy for less money, but it's got really high deductibles, and it pretty much doesn't kick in unless you're near death, and you have to pay for everything else out of pocket, well, I don't have to charge you very much. It's a really cheap policy,
right,
which anybody could afford, but it doesn't pay for anything either.
And it avoids the fees to the government.
Right. Another issue, companies with more than 50 full-time employees were supposed to offer them a health insurance or pay a penalty. That was supposed to go in place in 2014, but it's been rolled back to 2015. So now the hospitals are saying, wait a minute, what you're saying is the employers don't have to offer health insurance.
Right.
And where are those employees going to get their care and who's going to pick up the tab? It's going to be the hospitals.
And are they required to have the individual premium that's going to prevent them from getting the $95 fee? I mean, what's the deal? In the interim, are those employees going to have to pay that fee?
Yeah. Now, according to the RAND Corporation, that will not have a major effect on health insurance or financial support for the Affordable Care Act, but it sure may have a major effect on health care providers. Also, nearly half of Americans will qualify for the tax credits that we talked about. The support, again, that's supposed to be average tax credit of nearly $2,700. The tax credits go up to people who are earning less than 400% of the poverty level. The problem is, these insurance policies, the ones that have come out so far, are so low priced that the subsidies may not be there.
Right.
And so it is quite possible that the subsidies that we really thought would encourage people to buy insurance may not be there, and they will, in fact, come out of pocket. Now, again, the costs are a little bit lower, but we may or may not have the subsidies. We may or may not have the mandate in place. We're not sure about collecting the fines. And the exchanges are really going to be difficult to launch. Matter of fact, Arizona, apparently, they're going to develop their exchange in September.
Wow.
For an October 1st start date.
Nice. Think that'll be shoestring and baling wire, or
I think it. Well, everybody
some duct
agrees.
Tape thrown
it's
in there.
Tough to get something up and running in 1 month statewide that's going to enroll, I would assume, hundreds of thousands of people.
Are those guys? Now, I lived out there for my high school years. Everybody that's listened to the show for a while has heard me talk about it, and that is one of the most rebellious states. It's kind of funny. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great unknown. Right now, I got to say, the Affordable Care Act, still a great unknown, and we are about a month away from having insurance exchanges and only a few months away from many of the mandates taking effect in 2014. Speaking of taking effect, you need to take an effect or take something. Take a break and stay tuned for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I promise you we're not going to talk any more about Obamacare. And you have my word, Rick Phillips, on it.
Dr. Tony Weaver. What?
Don't you say it.
No, there's a pretty clear knowledge deficit about it, so we thought we'll at least bore you a little
bit. And there's
going to
be a bigger
knowledge.
One after this show.
This is the You Need Us, We Regulate You show. My salute to a very bad conference that I went to some time ago. I'll just put it that way. Our sponsor for the last time, the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, gastroesophageal reflux disease. It's hard to be placid with a chest full of acid. Gastroesophageal reflux disease affecting more than 100 million American adults, costing more than $9 billion annually. A couple of things. First of all, back last December, the American College of Physicians had guidelines on when to get an endoscopy. They said upper endoscopy is indicated in men and women if you have heartburn and alarm symptoms. These are the alarm symptoms with acid reflux. You have trouble swallowing. You have bleeding. You have low blood counts or anemia. You are losing weight, and you have recurrent vomiting. It is time to take a look with a scope. Don't be a dope. Go get a scope. If you have typical symptoms that persist despite a trial of 4 to 8 weeks of a really good, we call it proton pump inhibitor, this is the Prevacid, Prilosec, Nexium, Protonix, Acifex, that type of medicine. If you've tried that for 4 to 8 weeks twice a day and you're still having symptoms, you probably ought to get an endoscopy. If you have previous endoscopy showing inflammation of the esophagus called esophagitis, you need a follow-up. And then finally, if there is a history of scarring and stricture to the point where you have difficulty in swallowing, that will merit an endoscopy. Also, men over age 50 who have risk factors and people who need follow-up scopes. Those are the recommendations of the American College of Physicians. Now, there's one other thing, Rick. This was in a bizarre journal called Neurogastroenterology and Motility on August 6th. This was a group from Iran.
Okay.
Believe it or not, they do scientific research in Iran. This was Iranian adults, almost 5,000 of them. And they looked at their meal patterns, their eating rate, the amount of fluid they took in with their meals, and how long, they called it meal-to-sleep interval. They used a questionnaire for that, and they figured out what of those practices was most likely associated with esophageal reflux. First of all, in their population, about 24% of them had GERD or gastroacid reflux.
That seems high.
Well, again, you've got 100 million Americans, so I think
that's
it's
a third,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, easily. First of all, there were two distinct classes of meal patterns, regular and irregular. Do you eat regularly or do you eat irregularly?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So most of the time you say it's 6 o'clock, it's time for supper.
I eat regularly until I don't.
Okay. And, you know, that's one of my problems. I'm not
Tony,
regular.
Look at me. Does it look like I even eat?
Rick is wasting away right here in the studio.
Hey, don't
there
talk about my
three
waist
classes
like that.
Of eating rates. You got moderate, moderate to slow, and moderate to fast. I am a very fast eater.
You didn't say moderate. Did you say
fast?
Yeah, I
know. I would have to be moderate to fast.
Yeah, but moderate shouldn't even be used to describe the way you eat.
No, because I learned when I was in high school, you had 10 minutes, and you had to go through the line, eat your meal, and get back to class. And so,
see,
I
for me, it wasn't the high school. It was the military. The military, you had so many minutes in mess, and that was it. So, yeah, I'm a pretty fast eater, or at least I can be.
Okay. Two major classes of fluid ingestion, moderate and much intermeal drinking. I drink a lot of fluids with my meal.
Really?
My wife.
I'm learning more about you than I really want to know.
I understand. My wife, she will get a drink with her meal, and she will park it, and she will drink the drink after she eats everything.
Right.
I have to sort of lubricate my food
right.
with the drink. I'll eat a bite, take a swallow, eat a bite, take a swallow.
I don't know, Tony.
Yeah, so I'm a high.
That's why you guys are so attracted to each other.
I guess so. Two classes regarding the interval between meals and sleeping, short and long. And like I said, since I'm irregular, I don't know, I'm kind of a short, long, long, short kind of guy.
No comment.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you have an irregular meal pattern, you have a higher risk of acid reflux, but once you take into account the body mass index, obesity, that association disappears. So it appears that the irregular meal pattern is associated more with obesity than a regular one.
Well, I mean, wouldn't irregular eating be equated to always eating?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Just, I mean, you're unpredictable because you might eat now and you might eat in 10 minutes, you might eat in 30 minutes, as to where if you're, you know, you're three squares a day, you're probably pretty regimented and that's all you do.
A long meal-to-sleep interval drops your risk of acid reflux by around 27%.
That means there's a lot of time between when you eat and when you sleep.
Yeah, 3 hours is what the Mayo Clinic and the U.S. sources recommended. Eating rate and intramural fluid intake not associated with acid reflux. So fortunately, even though I drink a lot of drink with my meal, apparently that doesn't make anything worse.
No.
Yeah. Treatments, just briefly, again, these proton pump inhibitors, these medicines have been a revolution. If they don't work, there is a surgery where you just wrap the stomach around the lower part of the esophagus and strengthen that sphincter muscle with the stomach wrapped around it. Very simple to do, actually, using a scope. There is now, August 6th, Journal of the American College of Surgeons, they have an implantable device that uses a magnetic sphincter augmentation to strengthen the anti-reflux barrier. I love it. I guess it's some kind of a...
It's a sphincter enhancer.
Yes, it is. Wouldn't you love to have one of them?
Actually, no, I really wouldn't, Tony. No matter how you say it, it just doesn't sound appealing.
I just love you could be a cyborg and superhuman sphincters. There needs to be a TV show about it. You know it. I mean, look at you. You already know there needs to be a TV show about this.
No, I personally don't even think this segment will get on the air. I think you're being bleeped out as we talk.
I'm appealing to Asa. Asa, leave this. It's important that they understand the powers of sphincter enhancement.
Tony, come on.
That's our sponsor, the Disease of the Month Club, gastroesophageal reflux disease. It's hard to be placid with a chest full of acid. It's hard to be placid in the face of such blatant censorship.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Good futuristic ideas.
In some cases, you deserve it.
On to measles.
No.
USA Today, August 25th.
Do those still exist?
Interesting you should say that. At one time, up to 500 Americans a year died of measles. It has been officially eradicated in the Western Hemisphere.
Wait a minute. You can't eradicate something, kind of.
Well, in fact, I think...
It's either there or it's not.
I think the announcement of eradication was somewhat premature. It is resurgent.
Somewhat.
Yes. There already are 135 documented cases this year.
Oops.
Yes, and that's more than twice as many confirmed cases as occurred all of last year.
Now, I'm making a big joke of this, but still, pretty impressive that we can eradicate something. I mean, or at least diminish it significantly.
That's right.
Even beyond significant. I mean, almost entirely.
We know how to fight this disease. It is an incredibly, incredibly infectious disease. This is the article.
You had them when you were a kid, didn't you?
Yeah.
So did I.
Spreads like lightning. It kills 1 in 1,000 who get it.
Wow. Now, see, I wouldn't have guessed it'd be that high a number.
Yeah.
To me, it just seems like, you know, everybody I knew got measles, and none of them died.
Yeah. Well, the problem is it preys on, you know, again, your friends all healthy. It preys on people who are sick and have chronic childhood diseases.
Truthfully, I wasn't that popular either, Tony. I didn't know that many people.
Okay.
It's kind of like now.
Your mom had to take you somewhere to get the measles.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She took me to a field and gave me a football so people would play football with me.
The virus is incredibly contagious. Again, it passes by respiratory transmission. It can infect people even a couple of hours after a person has left the room. This is a one heck of a communicable disease.
I mean, but actually, this was one where you got it, you lived through it, and then you never got it again.
Right.
So it wasn't bad. It wasn't necessarily...
It comes back as shingles when you're older, but you're right. Measles is a one and done if you survive the initial one. Now, New York City's battle on measles epidemic this year, 58 cases, mostly in Orthodox Jewish communities who did not have a high level of vaccination.
Right.
Minnesota, 21 measles cases in a Somali immigrant community, also a low level of vaccination.
All isolated to that one community?
Mostly. But the thing is, it's so infectious, obviously it spreads, but that's where it starts. Well, on August 25th, USA Today reported an outbreak in Texas with 25 people affected, most of whom are members or visitors of a church. 15 centered around the Eagle Mountain International Church in Newark, Texas. The senior pastor there had been critical of measles vaccinations. A visitor had traveled to a country where measles remains common, came back, and brought it to the church.
Nice.
9 children, 6 adults, ranging from 4 months to 44 years old. Again, out of those 15, 12 of them were not fully immunized. The others have no record, and there's one 4-month-old that would not have been immunized anyway. William Schaffner, actually one of my mentors at Vanderbilt University, and not a particularly tolerant person of people who don't like vaccination, he says, this is a classic example of how measles is being reintroduced. At the Texas church, the visitor infected the congregation, the staff, the on-site daycare center, and actually the church has, in a sense, repented.
They offered free measles shots there in the church.
They sponsored a vaccination clinic August 18, and they have one on Sunday. All the school-age children infected at Eagle Mountain outbreak were homeschooled. Now, see, the state will require you to get your vaccinations before you come to school. But if you're homeschooled, you don't have to get those vaccinations. You can let them lapse, and that's what happened. Eagle Mountain's pastor said she still has reservations about the vaccines. We're concerned with young children who have a family history of autism, which is so frustrating to us. That has led to the harm and risk for so many young people, that completely false association. And they don't like to bundle too many vaccinations at one time. On the other hand, these kids didn't have any vaccinations, many of them, and so that's not the problem.
Right.
Young children are actually the most vulnerable to measles, according to William Schaffner. Their airways are smaller. They can easily swell shut. This is what Schaffner said. This is a sadly misinformed religious leader. So, in addition to getting the measles vaccine, the pastor recommends her congregation take vitamin D to fortify their immune system. There is no evidence, let me say again, no evidence, N-O evidence, that vitamin D does anything to prevent measles. But fortunately, we have a very, very successful way to prevent measles, and we do that with vaccinations.
Yeah, you know, Tony, the whole idea that it's a church, I don't think it's about the religion. It's really more about one person having the ability to put their views out there for essentially an audience that's kind of bought in.
Right.
And in agreement with them. And so, yes, that's 10 could be more prone to happen in a religious environment. But, you know, that could also happen in a corporation, a small business. I mean, there's a lot of places where you can, I mean, I'm surprised that we don't see this in some other places like that. I mean, for instance, the other community in the other state. I mean, it was a particular group of people, granted, albeit they were religious again, but.
Yeah. And sometimes it's ethnicity. Sometimes it's the trust of the government. Just to remind our people, our radio fans, on August 2nd, the CDC did a report on vaccination coverage among children in kindergarten. And they found that the vaccination coverage ranged from 85.7% for measles in Colorado up to 99.9% in Mississippi. The average was a little bit over 95%. 49 states and D.C. reported that school vaccination exemptions, the percentage of kindergartners with an exemption was less than 0.1% in Mississippi. It was 6.5% of all kindergartners had an exemption in Oregon. The average across the nation, 1.8%.
And those are exemptions for religious or belief issues.
Right. As far as states go, 46 states allow religious exemptions, 18 allow philosophical exemptions. 2, Mississippi and West Virginia do not allow any exemptions for religious or philosophic reasons.
You know, that's funny, too, because, you know, Mississippi is so, they lead the bad categories for certain things, but yet that seems like they're very strict on immunization, which is pro-health, which is a sign of a group trying to become more healthy.
Right. If you look at the Southeast has the highest vaccination rates in the country. It's like we are just the opposite of everything else. One of the problems is more educated, upper-middle-class people do not see an urgency to vaccination. I think they feel, again, with homeschooling, with gated communities, they are able to control who their kids are around. They have bought into the fact that vaccines may be dangerous, more so than people with lower socioeconomic status. And the end result is the vaccination rates are lower in upper socioeconomic. And this is practically the only thing where the lower socioeconomic people have a better approach to their health care than people who have more education and a higher socioeconomic status.
It's just so funny that they won't have any trouble going to see their physician and getting their regular checkups for colon screenings, for, you know, get their colonoscopy, get their mammograms. They won't have any trouble listening to the experts to do that. But boy, those vaccinations really trigger an emotional response in certain people. And there are cases where they do feel like they're more knowledgeable than the physicians. That's sad.
It really is. Don't be late. Vaccinate. Get your child measles vaccination now.
You're pushing me to the next topic, aren't you?
I am.
I can see it.
Just enough time.
No, you don't.
This was the Pew Research Center. A poll.
It's a smelly place.
And tidy. Thank you. Yeah, it's a research on really bad
smells. Or is it, or either a religion.
Yeah, yeah. Living to 120 and beyond, many Americans, they did a poll. They said 2,000 people. They asked, how long do you want to live? What would be your ideal life expectancy?
Through the end of this radio show.
Yeah, these 2,000 people, the median ideal lifespan was 90 years. That's about 11 years longer than the current average life expectancy, which is around 78, 79 years. But it's not forever. People don't say, I would like to live to 110. I think the way I look at it, and I've mentioned this to several people, the 80s are a pretty vicious decade. Most people in their 70s are happy. They're living that whole life. They're surfing and out with their friends and everything. When you get to the 80s, the music starts to slow down, and people spend more time at home. These chronic illnesses start to crop up, and life is just not quite as much fun. And it is only a rare person that will make it into their 90s, really having...
Doing jumping jacks.
Yeah, and having an independent life. Now, there's lots of ways to be happy other than having an independent and healthy life, but it is hard to be independent and healthy in your 90s, so you have to make some plans, I think. Be ready for your 80s. What I've learned from my parents is you don't change much during your 80s, and so it's important to have plans in place that will get you to age 90. A house that has access without stairs, all your basic things on one level, those type of things. So, don't know what our radio fans, how long they would like to live.
But be thinking about it.
Yeah, send in your suggestions and comments about how long we should live. Meanwhile, Rick, get us out of here.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Asa Hosoda and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to our show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember these important questions about Health Matters.
Why is Health Matters called the Healing Purple Radio Show?
Over time, untreated acid reflux can cause breaks or erosions in the lining of the esophagus. Only a doctor can diagnose this damage, which is called erosive esophagitis. Health Matters can heal those erosions, and that's why it's called the Healing Purple Radio Show. Most erosions heal after 4 to 8 shows. Your results may vary.
Who can prescribe Health Matters?
Doctors, and in many states, nurse practitioners and physician's assistants can prescribe radio shows. These qualified professionals can also determine whether Health Matters is right for you.
Is Health Matters affordable?
Well, of course not.
It's as free as you're going to see.
Yeah. Now, a few questions for you. What is the most important information people should know about Health Matters?
I don't know. Health Matters may help your acid-related systems, but you could still have serious stomach problems. Talk with your doctor. Health Matters may increase your risk of getting severe diarrhea. This diarrhea may be caused by an infection in your intestines. Call your doctor right away if you have watery stool, stomach pain, and fever that does not go away.
That's right. We are recommending you call your doctor right away if you have a watery stool. What are the possible side effects of Health Matters?
Listening for a long period of time may increase the risk of inflammation in your stomach and make you angry. You may or may not have symptoms. Low magnesium levels in your body. This problem can be serious. Low magnesium may happen in some people who listen for at least 3 months. You may or may not have symptoms. Bone fractures. If listening to multiple shows daily for long periods of time, you probably will have symptoms.
Does Health Matters contain gluten?
Gluten is not listed as an ingredient in our show. Since Health Matters does not actually review the material in our show, lack of contact with gluten cannot be guaranteed. Therefore, we cannot guarantee that Health Matters is gluten-free.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more ridiculous information from Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.